All right, and hello and welcome to a special BS bonus episode of the NastyCast Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're not talking fantasy baseball today. We're talking Game of Thrones. This is going to be the Season 7 preview, as well as we're just going to talk about the series in general, the books. First of all, before I get into anything else, thanks so much to Sir Pounce for doing the intro for us today. It was really hard to book him, but I think he did a great job with that intro. So thank you very much, Sir Pounce. So let me introduce the gentlemen that are here with me today. Of course, we have, as always nowadays, the handsome Dornishman, Van Lee.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I'm happy to be here. And yes, I'd like to thank Sir Pounce for getting over his grief and performing for us today. That was really big of him to come out and do that.
I'm surprised he made it out of King's Landing, to be perfectly honest.
It was you and me both.
Yeah, pretty rough at the end of last season. But the other man who you may or may not, longtime listeners will know this man, this voice, and it will be music to their ears. We have the King in the North, Jesse Jordan, making his triumphant return to the Nasty Cast.
Hey.
Some things never change.
I'd like to give a shout out to Sir Pounce too, but just one little request for Sir Pounce is, can't he do the Reigns of Cashmere? I can't even say it.
Castamere.
Reigns of Cashmere.
Not even 2 minutes into the show and I'm already pronouncing things wrong.
That's a sweet Led Zeppelin crossover though. Yeah. Exactly.
Meowed by Sir Pounce. That would be good.
There you go.
Oh, man. So let's dive into this stuff, guys. I've been stoked to talk about this stuff. I was late to hop on the Game of Thrones bandwagon. I actually didn't start watching until it was towards the end of season 5. And I'll be actually, I don't know, but probably by the time this is released, hopefully, my top 10 Game of Thrones episodes ever will be posted on Big Guy Fantasy Sports in the Man Cave section. But the first episode I ever saw was Hardhome, and it was the second half. And so I didn't really know what the hell was going on there, but, needless to say, like, as soon as I watched that, I was just hooked. I'm like, oh my God, why has nobody ever told me, like, you have to watch this and like read all these books and everything. So
I'm pretty sure I tried to tell you about the show before that point.
You needed to push me off a ledge,
but I didn't push you. I probably didn't push you hard enough.
No. Yeah, so I've been hooked ever since. I finally just, for Father's Day, I got the book set, so I've been cruising through the first book. I'm about halfway through now. We'll get into some of the differences between the books and the show in a little bit, but first off, I thought it would be fun to discuss what our family crest would look like if we had one, if we were living in the Game of Thrones realm, and what our motto would be. So, Jesse, since you're making your triumphant return, why don't you start us off?
Oh, I've got a doozy for you. My family crest would be a flag, obviously. That's what they carry around, banner, with a giant cheeseburger on it.
Is that it? Just the burger?
It would look, Hardee's always makes those big bacon burgers, with the huge patties, and you got the, the chicks in the commercial. I guess Carl's Jr. maybe. Man, I don't know.
We're Hardee's out here. We're in Hardee's territory.
You do have the Hardee's land. Yeah, they have the big guy. That's what it would be. It would just be like one of those huge, like, actually,
raises
livestock. So that would be my family. We'd hold that over your head. And are we going straight into the mottos, or are we going to round the horn?
Yeah, give it up.
Well, my motto would be, "Thy bitch needs some cheese."
Put some cheese on that bitch. Oh, man.
That's great.
Well done. If it was modern times, like, on the banner, you could do a GIF of, like, how in cheeseburger commercials, they always, like, seem to drop it from the sky so it bounces off the ground and then sort of floats up and you can see all the ingredients in between each other.
And they put, and when it hits the ground, it makes, like, an explosion noise. Like, it's always just this thud because it weighs 10 pounds. Yeah.
And then at the very, very back, like, when it zooms way, way out, it's a cheeseburger sitting in the middle of the island, cheeseburger paradise at the end of the GIF.
If only I were wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah.
That could be
your
colors.
I do have a salt shaker near me, though, if that counts.
I think so. You could take a tequila shot off yourself.
Who hasn't?
Who hasn't? All right, so what do you got for us, man?
All right, so basically my crest is going to be just a mishmash of just things. Like, for example, we've got in one corner like a sickly cat just kind of sitting there looking kind of sad. In the other corner, it's maybe just like an old woman who's just frowning, who's not mad, more just disappointed because, well, she's in this family crest. And then maybe just like a bag of Doritos in the middle. So it's just basically a mishmash of garbage, which is a story of my life, to be honest. And then I have two mottos for you. You guys can choose which you would prefer. Number one is, of course, all men must whine, but not like drink wine. I mean, like complain wine. And then number two is, of course, complaining is coming.
Yeah, the last one.
That's pretty accurate. Sure.
They're both good.
We would not be raising anything. We'd be like, I don't think we wouldn't be well off, but we wouldn't be poor, but we also wouldn't do anything. It'd just be like, oh, that's the Lee group. They've just got some stuff. I don't know how, but they just, sure.
It'd be just beyond Horn Hill.
Yeah, exactly. Just
people that don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. I hadn't given any thought into what my family would actually like be good at or do or live or anything like that. I don't know. I think we'd live in Dorne. We'd be Dornish people because it's nice and hot down there. And it would also have to do with my family crest, which would just be like a dude eating a burrito. And so Jesse, you and I are on the same wavelength.
We're same page.
And then our motto would be, we know guacamole is extra.
You don't have to say that, okay? We know it.
We know.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on. So it would definitely have to be somewhere where we could get avocados and make them into guacamole.
So that would definitely be Dorne because they grow in hot climates. So that'd be much better, sure.
Yeah. Very south.
I imagine that you would also be, you know, delivering things in some capacity. Maybe you would be like the family that trains the ravens to deliver messages.
Because,
you know, mail, all that.
Indeed.
It took me a long time to get it. You know, I really picked it up once you dropped the word mail.
It's all about the journey.
Just slap a stamp on the crow, on the raven.
On the bird.
Oh, Lord. All right. Let's, again, before we get into any of the Season 7 stuff, just kind of reflecting on how awesome the show is. I thought it'd be fun to talk about our top five moments and or quotes from the show. And at this point, I will go ahead and warn our listeners that this is not going to be your typical episode of the NastyCast in which we would bleep out or censor any cussing. Given the subject matter, I just kind of gave up because the show is just so vulgar and nudity all over and violent and everything. And honestly, I've never listened to another Game of Thrones podcast that doesn't have cussing on it. So I think we're just going to flag this one on Block Talk. And so if you're like listening in a vehicle and you got little kids in the car or something like that, maybe don't listen right now.
Earmuffs. Just say earmuffs for the next 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And then
this show has really grown up since I left.
Yeah, that's we're debatable. On class now. So yeah, a vulgarity warning right here because, we won't start with me, but mine will involve a lot of hound quotes. I'm just doing my top five houndisms, and pretty much all of them have gratuitous language in them. So, but Van, let's start with you. We'll just go round and round. We'll do our number fives and then fours and so on and so forth. So start us off, Van. What's your number five moment and or quote from the show?
Sure. And first and foremost, when we were discussing whether or not we were going to have this be vulgar or not, we mentioned censoring to an extent, and that's when we kind of realized that the hound quotes would be great if you censored him.
Yes.
What was the one I said? Darn the king. You know, something like that. That's great. Really also, is that guy who plays the hound, Rory something or other, he was in Hot Fuzz, if any of you have seen that movie.
Yes.
He was the big invalid guy who said yarp a lot, which is amazing. Two different guys.
Yeah, I found that out. Characters. Yeah, like after I'd been watching the show for a long time and, well, binging the show, I guess, for a long time. Mm-hmm. I was balls deep into the series, as they say. But yeah, and I found that I after I saw Hot Fuzz, I totally incorporated that into my vernacular. So like I say yerp.
Oh, yeah.
Or
all
yarp,
the time.
Yerp all the time. And my wife never knew what the hell that was from. I'd say it. She's like, what is wrong with you? You're a moron. Stop saying yerp.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's one of my, that's actually probably my favorite movie that those guys did. I think it's criminally underrated.
Yeah, I agree.
But anyway,
agree.
Back to Game of Thrones.
I have not watched Hot Fuzz, but I was a big Shaun of the Dead fan, so I definitely need to.
So my number five moment, I've got mostly moments. I didn't really do a whole lot of quotes. And this was a big one from this past season, so maybe we're treading ahead, but it was big enough to meet my moment, so I'm huge on it. And that's, of course, the Hodor reveal. We found out how Hodor got his name, why he can only say the word Hodor. I don't know. Do you want to get into that now? Do you want me to explain it, or do we want to wait and get into that?
We could just do it now, I guess.
Might as well do it now. So Basically, the idea is Bran is a warger. I've already forgot the term that they give him, but he wargs and other things. And they were being chased by the children, or not the children of the forest, but the White Walkers. And basically, without getting too into it, it came down to Hodor was holding the door and Bran was screaming at him, hold the door. Yet also at the exact same moment in present tense, in the past, when Hodor was a young child, he was being warged into by Bran right before this. So the hold the door thing kind of morphed into Hodor, hold the door, hold the door, Hodor. And actually, I've got a kind of a cool story on that. A guy came out and released somewhere on Twitter or whatever, and it was George R. R. Martin said this is true. He met George R. R. Martin on an elevator once and just, you know, started having small talk with him. And Martin said, you know, if I couldn't be an author or do anything, I always wanted to be like an elevator man, a doorman. And so the guy made a joke, huh, that must be where Hodor comes from. Hold the door. And then it turns out, of course, a few years later, yeah, he was absolutely correct. So this guy knew that, and he was the first to guess it, arguably. And that's kind of a cool moment. And I thought it was a really, really big moment in the series. And of course, Hodor gets torn to pieces immediately after that. So it's a sad moment as well.
Man, that moment like stuck with me seriously more than any other in the entire series. And I wrote about that in my top 10 too. Like, I just sat there. I think I texted you, Jesse, too, after. It's like, I just sat there dumbfounded after it happened. Like, I could not believe it. Crushed my soul.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect, and it was so easy to figure out. But like, I must rewatch that last 10 minutes of that episode 3 to 4 times that night. Just
I did the same thing.
Went back and just kept. It was so. I was so emotionally attached to a character that, honestly, I mean, it didn't hold a whole lot, you know, as far as screen like that. But it was just just the way they did it and how that it worked out. It was just really, really powerful. I mean, it was a tough scene to watch. And it just moved you. I thought I was one of the best, 10-minute scenes of TV in my mind. Never. It didn't even make my top five, but I knew that it would be. I kind of figured it would make the mentioning, but I don't know how I didn't put it on mine because it did emotionally attach me in that scene in that moment. So it was
I think it's
hard to even talk about.
Yeah, we'll probably get more into. Perhaps the warging in our in our season 7 predictions and
preseason.
That's the preseason.
Postseason.
Technically, yeah, sure.
Game of Thrones preseason. I think we'll touch on that a little bit more at that point. But Jesse,
I love the trades that the Lannisters did this offseason. It was really great. Really shored up their defense.
Yeah.
Season 3, they really, really made some good off-season deals to shore up Joffrey's kingdom there, too, when they did the Red Wedding scene. So I'm sure hopefully I didn't spoil anything with that comment. my number five, I think it's the biggest, it was the first WTF moment of the show, and it really, in my mind, kind of got you into the George R. R. Martin's frame of mind and the way he is not afraid to write off any character. And that's Ned Stark's beheading. If you remember going back to that scene for a while there, he almost felt like that maybe they were going to let him live and maybe go take on the Black, or, you even had Cersei trying to talk some sense into Joffrey too. And for Cersei to, we, what is it? We all live and die and play the Game of Thrones. I can't even remember the phrase right now. I'm so nervous. Am I talking?
When you play the Game of Thrones, you live or you die, something like that.
There we go. There we go. Perfect. So, I mean, I just think that beheading scene was, you know, it introduced you into this character that had been in literally every episode so far and probably had the most screen time at that point than any other character in the whole show, in the whole series. And then, you know, he's just dead. So I'd have to say that, you know, if that doesn't happen, that scene doesn't, I mean, I'm not sure how good the show even gets later on, because it introduces you into this moment where good guys and, you know, the people that you think are going to be the protagonist and the, you know, the good people throughout this whole series, and there's no way they'll ever die. You know, in a second, he's dead. I mean, crazy. So
yeah,
that'd be my top moment.
Yeah. And it was okay. So from the perspective of the show, and I guess we can get this off the top. I've read all the books. You guys are reading or have read parts of them. So you haven't finished the series. I have. But from the show's perspective, you see this from Arya. She's the character we're focusing on as her father's beheaded. And he leans in and whispers something to Varys before it happens. You don't really hear any of that or get a whole lot of sense of that on the show. In the books, it was even worse because the chapter was from Arya's perspective. And he actually, what I think what he whispers, and don't quote me on this, was, of course, oh, no, never mind. I'm not even going to say it. We'll come on to that later. But anyway, it comes from Arya's perspective, and it just kind of happens. It's not even as dramatic as in the show, because it's just Arya gets grabbed by the guy from the castle or from the wall, who ends up taking her a little ways before they get attacked. But anyway, and she just doesn't even see it. She just hears the head hit the thing, and it was really kind of powerful, but also non-existent. And that really set up a tradition in the books of, yeah, people just die. It just kind of happens. It's not even, they don't even make a big to-do about it half the time. It's just kind of a thing. And I know the one time that made me really angry, because a character that I actually really like is Ser Davos. Well, they kind of did this whole different storyline in the books with Ser Davos, where from, I think it was book 4, from the reader's perspective, Davos is killed. And you don't, it's just the only thing they know is you see his head's on a spike and you see his hand with his little nubs. And so Davos is dead. And then they don't even touch it for the rest of the book. However, in season 5 or book 5, you kind of find out that they had put someone up there. So Davos wasn't killed. But up through until I read that he really wasn't killed, I was so mad, because I was like, OK, I get it. You did it with Ned. I thought it was well done. But if you just keep freaking doing this, it's going to piss me off. I got to have at least a little bit of semblance of reaction to it. But it turns out that I was kind of a false attack there with that. But yeah, it really kind of set up the series in that regard. It's just showing you that no one is safe. Everyone's, you know, fair game to get murdered.
Get used to it. Yeah, that whole scene, the benetting, it just definitely sets up the entire show. I know when the wife and I were watching it the first time, she was just freaking out, like, what? This can't be. She refused to believe it.
I was just like, what? Like, no way. Like, and I was probably on, I want to say there was season 4 was just about to start when I got into it. And that, you know, about a half year before season 4 would have started is when I got into it. So I was way behind in the books, but I got the books immediately after I started the show. So, but you know, it's been 4 years and I'm only 2 books into it. So
right.
You tell I like to read.
And I refused to watch the show until I read the corresponding book. And I started late as far as it goes. I think 2 seasons of the show were out once I started reading. And then I took probably a year or so to read all the books and then started watching the show. However, I had also been kind of spoiled with the Ned death. I knew it was happening because every interview that Sean Bean did, you know, they talked about how he dies and everything, and that came up. So unfortunately, that was spoiled for me in the book. But like I said, in the book, it's even less of a to-do, so it wasn't as dramatic as in the show. Also, Sean Bean's name should be pronounced the same, the first and last, so it should be Sean Bean.
Yes, totally agree.
I like that.
All right, my number 5 houndism is going to be, he's saying this to somebody as he's slowly killing him very grotesquely and painfully. as he is wont to do. I don't even know who it is. I think it's just sort of random soldier. I don't think it's anyone of any great importance. But and it's towards the end of the most recent part of the series, too. And he just says, "You're shit at dying, you know that."
Yeah, I think that's him. when he hangs the guys.
Yep, yep.
After they kill that big group. But yeah, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, someone with like the Brotherhood Without Banners, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I was so happy when he came back.
Absolutely. Love the Hound.
Yep.
All right, so number four, if you don't know this about me, I like strong, independent women, which is why I'm a big fan of actually a lot of the women in Game of Thrones. Cersei, Dany. I mean, Cersei everybody hates because she's a vile, awful witch.
Is that also why you're single?
Yes. But I can also appreciate what she does and how she does it. But anyway, my number four moment is actually another one that's a character we all know and love, and that's Daenerys. This is her rebirth. So this is when she, Khal Drogo dies, and she just wanders into that fire, and it's like, oh, well, this sucks. But then she's reborn amongst the fire. It didn't hurt her at all. And she's got the hatched dragon eggs. And I think that really was a character arc for her that changed her. She went from being the, damsel to being this strong, you know, badass woman that we see in much more recent seasons. Now, she still had some growing pains to go through, but this was the real about face for her.
I agree. Daenerys's story arc is one of my favorite just because of the dragons and the magic. And that scene also is one that I thought about in my top five. So I'm really glad you brought it up. And that's also one that I rewatched multiple times, you know, just because I thought it was so awesome to see those baby dragons flying around her.
That's what you were watching.
You know, yeah. It had nothing to do with, you know, the fact that her clothes burnt off. But
right.
It's all the baby dragons, I promise. But yeah, no, that's just her character. Watching it from start to finish has just been great. And even in season one, that moment, how much she grew, made the choice to be in the burning fire or in the pyre. And then, that was pretty BA. So
season one was definitely my favorite scene with Dany because she seemed to grow exponentially in that season between coming out from under the finger of Viserys and then becoming the unburnt, and you see like, holy shit, maybe she is really going to play a huge role in this after all, instead of just being this scared little girl. And since then, there's been some bumps in the road, in my opinion. She's slowed down quite a bit, but I do like where she's heading. I'm stoked that she's getting to Westeros.
Oh, yeah. Plus, you like her booty.
Love.
Booty. Yeah, I once tweeted that Sarah Connor couldn't upgrade anymore, and that's why. That's because it's Amelia Clark. So
we went from Lyndall Hamilton, who, man, that woman had some muscles.
Like, oh,
she
yeah.
She was ooh, but, yeah. To Emily Clark, I think is her name. That's right.
Amelia.
Amelia, that's it. I can get the show names right. It's the actors' names I struggle with.
Yeah. All right, Jesse.
You'll still walk circles around me. All right. My number four is from the last season, actually. And there wasn't a scene, and excuse my language here, but there wasn't a scene in this show up to this point that made me say, fuck yeah, like this one did. And that was when Arya slits Walder Frey's, does the whole, but they're already here. He wants to know where her sons and where everybody are.
There's a finger in the pie.
In the pie. And then she, she makes him look right at him and just, and I just, I was like, the adrenaline in my veins were just, you know, for how sad and down I was from Hodor to Arya doing the slitting of the throat, where I just pumped my fist and I was just, it was almost that payoff moment. Like, that could have been the end of the season and I'd have been just fine. It was just, it was that great. So my number four is Arya killing Walder Frey.
Yeah, that's what makes these moments so much better than any other show in my estimation, is just because of with all of the horrible things that happen to the characters that you love, when they finally do get redemption like that, it feels so much better than any other show. Yeah, it means so much. Mm-hmm. And speaking about saying things that mean so much, got another beautiful quote from the Hound here. He is nothing if not articulate. When he's arguing with Polliver in a local tavern, saying that, I understand if any more words come pouring out of your cunt mouth, I'm going to have to eat every fucking chicken in this room.
That's one of my favorite scenes. And, you know, not a lot of people recognize or remember that, because I do the two chickens thing all the time, and most people just give me a weird look, even Thrones fans. But I'm like, for some reason, that just stuck with me. And that's great.
Yeah, that whole back and forth is just fantastic.
That whole scene. Yeah, and I'll actually get to that shortly. But for me, my number three moment, and this is a big one, and I'm surprised this wasn't higher on my list, but I don't know, I'm kind of a sadist, so... Number three on my list is, of course, The Purple Wedding and King Joffrey's death. And the only reason I think it's actually this low is because it was a bit anticlimactic in that he just kind of choked and died. I don't know. I kind of expected Joffrey, they would go kind of like they did the Ramsay route. Like, Ramsay's death was awesome. I thought there might be something a little more violent in that regard, but there really wasn't. But it was still very, very fulfilling. And I was just more than anything excited to never have to hear, read, see, or anything to do with that asshole of a character.
I was just shocked that it happened so soon.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be that quick into the, season four? So
season four, episode two. Like,
yeah.
Stuff like that doesn't usually happen that early in a season.
I'll admit, I gave a little golf clap for it. I was kind of happy. But at that point, you hadn't had like a really good guy win situation. And honestly, you didn't even know who did it. Like, I mean, you had your hunches and you kind of figured, kind of knew who would kind of be behind it. But at the same time, you really didn't know who did it. Whereas when, you know, Red Wedding happened, you knew.
Well, that was pretty obvious. Yeah.
You know, you knew. So, but it was still a good payoff moment. I mean, it was kind of like a reward for all the shit you've put up with for three seasons.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, he was, as far as I'm concerned, the best, like, villain of all time. I've never hated anybody so bad as I've hated Joffrey. Just a terrific villain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I clapped as well, Jesse, when that happened. A full-on loud clap. It wasn't even a golf clap. I was so excited to see him die. And, of course, apologies to the Joffrey podcast guys as we're speaking ill of his king.
A king has a lot of important matters to be talking to.
That's right. Your fingers or your tongue? Oh, good stuff. Go listen to the Joffrey podcast if you want a good laugh, people. Great podcast.
And last point I want to make here, and that's actually more Ramsay than it is Joffrey, to your point that Joffrey was the best villain, like, Ramsay was comically evil. Like, he was just like, yeah, I hated
over
Ramsay,
the top.
But it was so over the top that it's like, eh. But Joffrey was so vile, but he had that little bit of charm, particularly early on, that he was, you know, kind of be this strapping young king, but then he was so awful. So, no, I completely agree with that point. That it will be hard to usurp him as truly one of the worst ones in this book, show, whatever you want to, whatever particular medium you're interested in.
Yep. So I think we're on you, Jesse, right?
All right. Number three. Yeah, you kind of spoiled my number three and with your houndism. So mine basically is number three is just the hound in general. And I was going to talk about the chicken, and you kind of already did this one too. But the axe, when they had the Ian McShane character and, you know, the return of the hound, they devote a lot of screen time to, you know, kind of him with talking with the priest and almost buying into the religion, but then he, you know, he actually likes the guy and then sticks around to, you know, kind of help him out, chops like more lumber than any other man in all of Westeros ever has in one night. And then it costs the whole, you know, the whole crew their life. And then he goes and he grabs that axe. I don't remember if it was end of episode 7 last season, 8, somewhere around there. And then the very next episode pays you off for the wait, and he goes on his wrath. And, you know, you got those guys that are making the joke about the thumb up the butthole or the finger up the butthole.
Yeah, what was that? Oh, my
God. And then all of a sudden, the hound shows up and starts slitting their throats and throws his axe at, you know. And a couple of those guys were just kids, but he didn't care because they were part of the crew that basically killed all his friends. And, you know, just like even before he hangs them, and he wanted to be able to kill, I think, all three of those guys himself. And I can't remember, he negotiates, it's one or two that he gets to do it, but they don't let him, you know, they let him hang it. And then he's like, there was a time when I would have fought all six of you for just to kill these
Yeah.
Just kind of shows you like how badass he really can be. So the Howling.
Yeah, and quick one of the notes, great characters. For him, he's in the show, obviously he's back. In the books, he's back because obviously he's back in the show, but it's done a little differently. And in fact, his whole death, which where he fights Brienne of Tarth and then basically falls down the hill and then Arya leaves him for dead, that didn't happen. He didn't fight Brienne. And in fact, I think it's book five, whatever the most recent one is, Brienne is traveling somewhere and he comes across a like a priest of some sort. And there's this hulking grave digger that they describe who's larger than any man you've ever seen. And he walks with a visible limp. And there's a lot of theories that that's actually the Hound. And I firmly believe that that's what it is simply because he is back in the show. But in the books, he has not been revealed to have returned yet.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, more Houndisms then before we go back to you, Van. My number three, the Houndism, is, of course, during the Battle of Blackwater when you've finally had enough of Joffrey and fire in general. His famous line, "Fuck the King's Guard, fuck the city, fuck the king."
Darn the king, indeed.
Darn the king.
Yeah, it's a great moment because then he basically sets off in his path to meet up with Arya, which is going to seep right into my number two, which is every single scene with Arya and the Hound because they're all just golden. That's like it's like the little dog and the big dog in the old cartoons. That's the exact relationship that those two had. And in particular, the scene you mentioned where he's getting the chickens and he's killing all the guys in the bar. Like, that was all awesome. So basically, my number two favorite moment in the show is every single scene with Arya and the Hound.
Nice.
Those are some great times. Kind of hope for, they get reunited here soon.
Little reunion, so, sure.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. My number two, Nate brought up basically at the opening of the show and talked about how he got into Game of Thrones in the first place. And that's Hardhome, and more specifically, not just that whole, the 20-minute scene of just that or act or whatever you want to talk about it, where it's just at Hardhome and talking about the Battle of Hardhome, but the ending when the Night's King, or I guess whatever you want to phrase you want to call him, but I think in the show that's who it is, Night's King, leader of the White Walkers, where he stands at the end of the dock and raises his hands up, and then everybody raises from the dead. Yeah. As Jon Snow has to sit with all the wildlings and his men as they're retreating on their boats, and how he gets to witness that is it was just phenomenal. Lots of awesome parts that happen where, John grabs Longclaw and actually kills a White Walker, first time that, besides when Fat Sam, Mr. Sam Tully, probably the guy I relate to the most in the whole show, grabs a piece of Gregan glass and kills a White Walker at that point. But, at that point, basically you thought they were pretty much invincible when it came to sword fighting and seeing what they could do. And it kind of turns the tides, and then they still lose the battle. And then watching Night's King raise his arms was just a wow moment for me. So that's my number two.
Are either of you familiar with the, I'm sure you might even still be around, but the early 2000, late 90s professional wrestler Kane?
Yep.
Okay, so when Kane would come to the ring back then, he would walk up and he would raise his hands. Yep. And then it would push him down, and then flames would shoot from the ring post. That's exactly what I thought when the Night's King did that. So it lost a little bit of its magnificence to me because that's all I could picture when it happened.
You just ruined that scene for me.
Yeah, way to go.
Because that's what I'm going to – now when I rewatch it, for my 15th time or whatever, when he goes up, I'm going to be waiting for the go down and then the water to explode or something.
Yeah. And another fun fact, none of that happened in the books.
No shit.
None of it. No. Basically what happened is Jon knew that he had to go get those wildlings, so he sent boats. And I think he borrowed money from Dorne to do it, but I can't remember that exactly. But yeah, so he didn't see the Night's King. He didn't fight any of them. None of that happened. Now, I get why they did it in the show. It's because it's dramatic, and I'm totally for that. I thought it was really well done. But yeah, not a book event.
Yeah. But Hardhome and the Battle of Hardhome existed, right? Where they got slaughtered. It's just Jon wasn't actually there.
Kind of.
Is that,
kind of okay. You hear about it in second hand. Yeah, it's like, not an actual, lost a lot of people. That's basically what it was.
Okay. There wasn't an actual point of view chapter about it. Okay.
Yeah, because that's crazy, because that's one of the really iconic scenes in the entire series. When I think about Game of Thrones, that's one of the first scenes that comes to mind.
Well, you're wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. Who are we on? Is it me?
You. Number one.
My number two.
Number two.
This also is from the Battle of Hardhome. Any man dies with a clean sword, I'll rape his fucking corpse.
Another classic, classic houndism.
If that doesn't get the troops going, like, I don't know what will.
I mean, I'm motivated to do something, and I don't even know what to do. And you're 1,000 miles away from me, too, so yeah.
Well, keep podcasting.
Well, number one, then. My top moment in Game of Thrones, and I'm going to go ahead and kind of give some backstory to this. Of course, we all know I read the books before I watched the show, and when I read this part in the book, I literally dropped the book, and I went, are you fucking kidding me? I was so angry. I was so mad, and it was so well written and well done, but it also happened so quickly. And that is, of course, the fight in season 3 or 4, I can't remember, between the Mountain and Oberyn Martell.
Ah, yes.
And so when I actually finished the book and I got to watch it on the show, I was looking forward to it. That was the moment I wanted to see, and it did not disappoint. It was so cool, and the way the Mountain just crushed his eyeballs out, that was so great. But yeah, it was, I mean, Martell's, this is the one of the first moments that I thought we might see, you know, something good happen. But sure enough, no, because I didn't expect Tyrion to disappear that quickly. And I figured if Oberyn Martell loses that fight, Tyrion's as a character is done. I figured they'll wipe him out. So I really expected Martell to win that fight. And sure enough, he didn't, because he was trying to screw around a little too much. But it was so well done. And the actor did such a good job with the character. The books, it was great. So overall, that's my personal number one moment from Game of Thrones.
Awesome.
Oberyn would probably make my top four character list. I love that guy. Mm-hmm. Even though he had a short span on the show, and I was really pissed when he lost. Technically he still won, because he poisoned his spear, because he, you know, the Mountain technically died too, but mm-hmm. Yeah, he demanded a little too much, and he should have just took care of business. But what a great show that it invests so much. And even the books, obviously, like you said, you dropped the books, but it invests so much into you emotionally that you react even when nobody else is around. Like, I watch a show, my wife doesn't really watch TV, and she has really no interest in watching it, so I usually venture downstairs and watch it by myself, and my dog has to look at me like, what the hell are you talking to? Because I get so emotionally invested into it. So anyways, my number one is probably, it's probably boring, and honestly, my favorite moment probably is the Hardhome. But I got to go back to the first time that I was ever curious about watching Game of Thrones, and, you know, had HBO for free. We moved to a new town, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, I've heard a little bit about this show, I might as well check it out. So immediately, I see the opening credits, and I hear that, you know, the and blah blah blah, and I was like, oh, that, you know, gets me going. And then I'm watching episode one of this show, and I literally have no idea what the hell's going on. They're throwing, and I was trying to look it up, how many characters are introduced in season one that actually have speaking parts, and episode one more specifically. And I couldn't find a number. And I should have just watched it and counted, because it's unreal how many different directions they're pulling you. They're throwing you, you know, they start you out north of the wall, and then they're, you know, you're at Bell, and you meet Galen and Ned and the kids, and all of a sudden you're over and you're meeting Daenerys and Viserys and blah, blah, blah. And you're just all the way through it. And then, here's me with the expansion span of zero, trying to get into this show where I can barely hear, you know, at that point, I don't even think I even knew as being a half deaf person, I should watch with the closed caption on. So I was trying to follow everything, no clue what's going on. And at the very end of the episode, you see this kid climb to the top of the tower, and there are Jaime and Cersei, who I had no idea who these people are. You know, I didn't, I, didn't really tie together with their brother and sister. I remember specifically after Bran gets pushed out of the window, and I'm like, holy crap, they just pushed this little kid out of the window, and I'm pretty sure that's brother and sister doing. So I watched the next 2 to 3 episodes to try to make sure that it was that Jaime and Cersei were really brother and sister. And if it wasn't for that scene of Bran falling out of the tower or getting pushed out of the tower, I don't know if I would ever went back. Like, I'll be honest, that first episode was, I go back and watch it on a rewatch, and it's an amazing episode. It's great, but it's so much easier to watch when you, maybe if you're a book reader, you know some of the characters or stuff like that. But once you're actually familiar with characters, it's so much better to go back and watch that first episode. But when you're first trying to watch it and just get into the show, you're so mind blown and you have no idea. And if it wasn't for that, the end of the show, the eye catcher. I can't even think of what I'm trying.
Oh,
what the hell's
yeah, I know what you mean. The cliffhanger.
You know, the cliffhanger, the Dexterism. Once they threw the cliffhanger at me, that's what got me into watching the next few shows. And then eventually I hit the Ned Stark's beheading, and then I was hooked. So if it wasn't Jaime Cersei scene where they pushed Bran down, I probably don't ever even get into this show.
Well, and this was not your fault, by the way. So the show writers, D.B. Weiss and the other guy, I can't remember his name.
Benioff.
Yeah, they were actually criticized. I don't think criticized is the right word for the first episode, the pilot episode, for a number of reasons. First and foremost, go back and watch it and put yourself in the mindset that you don't know anything about it. You don't know that Jaime and Cersei are brother and sister. Yep. They don't make it clear. You realize they made that mistake later on.
Yeah. I think and they had an original pilot that actually they made them reshoot.
Oh, is that what it is?
I heard, but they still, I think they do make a point to say something about you're my sister in there.
Okay.
When Jaime says it, but it's still not that clear. I mean, you have to hang on every word. Mm-hmm. If you're not watching, like, I close caption every episode at volume 50 now, so that way anything that I might miss here, I can at least read. It makes the show that much better because then it gives you the name, makes it easier to watch because it gives you the character's name and what they're saying. But anyways, you're right. Like when I had no idea anything about the show and I'm trying to watch this first episode and it has to be in the 20s
mm-hmm.
where there's characters with speaking parts. You know, I watch plenty of shows that have lots of characters, but you know, usually they cut it down to probably under 10 when I have speaking parts just to get you into the character development. And then, you know, so it's still, I still would criticize that pilot, that first episode, just because
I was
how broad, but it's so hard to introduce. I know why they did it. They wanted to introduce some of the, you know, the most important players right away anyways, but
yeah,
wow.
It's a lot to digest for sure. And it was well into the season 1, season 2, and I'm still trying to figure out all these character names. And I will definitely say reading the book it's a lot easier to process who's who and remember all the names and stuff. And I did hear, I was watching an interview with Benioff and Weiss, and they were talking about that. They touched on just how bad a job they did with the pilot. So they were worried that obviously hindsight is 20/20. They were worried at the time it wasn't even going to get picked up. And they're like, oh, God, we butchered this and all this. But it's history. So, but anyway,
I do have to ask Nate real quick, since you were on this book show topic. So when you read the books, do you see the characters that they have on the show? Like,
yeah.
Is that what you picture?
I've thought about that a lot. Like reading through this book, like if I had read this 20 years ago when it came out, as opposed to after watching the show twice over, you know, how would I envision these guys? And because now I read every word of dialogue in the voice of the actor on the show as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I'm the same way. And it almost makes the books hard to read for me sometimes. No excuse, I just don't like to read that much. But it does make it hard to read because you're like, well, I already kind of know this character. And I know so it's kind of sometimes I find myself like almost like kid at school going la-di-da, you know. I'll read this, but I don't really care because my mind's on fast forward while I read it. So,
yeah.
You know, it almost spoiled it a little bit that way. But anyways, I'll let you bring up your number one.
My number one houndism is my favorite line because it inspired a meme that I use all the time. And it's when the hound is with Arya, as we've touched on, and they're looking through this hedge, and Arya was talking about her sword Needle, and she says, "Lots of people name their swords," to which the hound replies, "Lots of cunts." and so there's a meme that I found that replaces Arya's dialogue with "lots of people don't watch Game of Thrones," which I send out to our friend Joe all the time, who refuses to watch it just because it's so, you know, like the in thing to do.
That's awesome and yeah. Perfect.
No one knows who Joe is.
Yeah. No. former host. What a schlub. So one last thing that we're going to do real quick before we take a break is I thought it'd be fun to choose our own death from the show as our own personal way to go. And I'll start it off here because we already touched on it. And that was, I would choose to have my throat cut by Arya. Like Sir Meryn Trant, though. not like Walder Frey, because I'm not really into people high.
Yeah, you don't want to eat your kids.
No,
sure.
No. That's a bit much.
Meryn Trant is not the...
The pedophile.
That's the pedophile, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. She stabbed him in the eyes first.
Yeah.
Oh, she did, yeah.
I forgot right. about that.
Yeah, like,
you know what? I'll still take that over people pies.
Yeah, at least you didn't eat another human in that regard. Sure, sure.
I guess, but yeah, you got your eyes poked out. Like, she tortured that dude.
Yeah.
Well, he deserved it.
Yeah, he had it coming. I don't know. There's so much throat cutting on this show and so many other shows. If I'm going out, I might as well find out how it actually feels. Obviously not good, but...
Sure. I mean, go out in a ball of fire, right? Which is why, for my choice, I considered being disemboweled by the Hound. I think that would be really cool. That's the first season when he picks him up by the throat and just cuts his stomach open and he just...
At least
ever on the floor.
Insulted while you die, right?
Exactly. That'd be like being in like an action movie from the 90s, except it'd be starring the Hound. Wait, I have an idea. But that's not my choice. My actual choice... is, of course, falling through the moon door.
Yeah. That would be a
Make
fun ride.
Make him fly, Dad. Or what the hell's that little Robin say?
Yeah.
Make him fly.
Batman fly. Yeah.
So. Oh, I hate heights. I couldn't do that one.
Oh, so do I. But if I'm going to do it.
I always expected, you know, Tyrion being in that jail cell with a slanted door. Like, if that was me.
Oh, yeah.
There's no damn way. I mean, I would have started rolling like he did, and I would have just went right off the edge. There's no way to stop myself, and it would have been just like a moon door death. But if I got to choose how I'd die, I'd probably do the Cal Stark or Call Stark way, or the, you know, Ned Stark beheading. Just drop the axe and let me go. Like it's really. I mean, obviously the anxiety of knowing that you're about to die is probably. Suck, but at least I don't have to bleed out or get stabbed in the eye or watch myself fall from Mount Everest.
Unless it's Theon attempting to do the beheading, which case it's going to take a couple whacks.
Yeah,
good call. I kind of forgot about the whole Theon Greyjoy trying to pull the Stark way too, and you know, like he learned enough of the Stark way that he tried to do the beheading himself. That he, you know, end up making it way worse and making him look like a little bitch anyway. Anyways, yeah, and speaking of little bitches, if you want to talk about Joffrey and, God, he was a little bitch, but who's the other evil guy that you talked about earlier, Van, and slipping my
Ramsay?
With Ramsay. He, to my mind, you're right, he was common comedy. You know, comical about how bad he was, but that character was just great as a bad guy.
Ramsay so, Bolton with his dogs.
I would never want his death, but.
All right. Well, we're going to go feed our canines right now. Take a little break. We'll catch you on the flip side. Oh, boy, those dogs were hungry. I'm glad we got them the Alpo as opposed to my leg. So let's move on to some season 7 stuff. It is a scant several days away. I, for one, get goosebumps every time I think about it and all the stuff that might happen. And then I go back and watch one of the two trailers and my nipples stiffen. So I'm very excited we're going to do some predictions. We're going to talk about what we want to see first and then what we think will happen. after that, and then after that, we're going to give our end of series predictions. Before, as a matter of fact, we give out the actual ending. That's right. We have found an actual copy of the ending, the final chapter of the show, but we're going to tease that now and give that to you guys a little bit later on. But so let's. I'm really excited to talk to you guys about the season 7 stuff. So first of all, what do we want to see? I guess, Van, we can start with you.
Well, I mean, I guess that just depends on what character arcs you find the most interesting. I mean, we're kind of powering towards a culmination here. I mean, Dany and Tyrion are on their way to King's Landing. Jon Snow and his sister Sansa, they're basically raising their army. They've defeated Ramsay Bolton, so now they can push at King's Landing. We've got the Dornish making a pact with the Tyrells, which was awesome, by the way. Even though the show has absolutely butchered everything there is to do with Dorne, that was kind of cool seeing Lady Tyrell and I can't remember her name, Oberyn's bitch, for sure, less of lack of a term, make their agreement.
It's Myrcella, right?
Myrcella. No. Myrcella is Jaime's daughter. She was killed at the end of that one. Shit. That's Jaime and Cersei's daughter. Right. I can't remember her name. She's the brunette, but there's a term for it. Oh, well. So anyway, I think it just kind of depends on what character arc you're really that interested in. Because then also we have the Bran Stark thing going on. He and Mira Reed have escaped from the White Walkers. So what's going to go on there? We've got Ser Davos, you know, kind of concerned about the White Walkers as opposed to just King's Landing. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. I think ultimately this is the season that we probably see a culmination with Cersei. I think something happens because I think ultimately what they're going to do is have this go down with Cersei, kind of culminate in all of that. And then the final season, which I believe is next year, that's going to be more of a White Walker versus the Earth. So we'll kind of see what that is. So it's going to be interesting for sure. But this is also only the second season that I'm going in blind, because last year was the first year that didn't have a book that corresponded with it. And they pulled some stuff from the books. But, you know, the Jon Snow reveal, the Hodor death, all this stuff didn't happen in the books yet. So it's all new to me. So this is kind of exciting times for me as a fan in that I don't know what's going to happen. So this is all just super surprising as we go along.
Ellaria Sand, by the way.
Ellaria Sand, that's Ellaria. It. Yeah. Sand is their surname for bastards.
Yeah, and I murdered that one.
You were close.
It's all right. Myrcella. You're into Tyrion Lannister level of drunk, right?
That's right.
I'm somewhere between Tyrion and Robert Baratheon, boar hunting, drunk.
Hopefully there are no boars around you right now.
Watch out.
Yeah.
I don't know. You are up there in North Dakota or whatever creatures you have wandering around in the woods, like moose. You could probably get impaled by a moose, right?
I could, and I do live out of town, but I don't have enough trees around here for a moose. So if I'm going to die, it's probably gonna be like a raccoon or maybe a mountain lion could maybe happen.
Yeah.
Or a really big bull snake. I've got a few of those. So
That would suck.
Yeah. It would.
So what are you hoping to see, Jesse?
Oh, man. Like, my number one main goal is I hope they show a lot of Bran. I love the whole Three-Eyed Raven mentality and how Bran Stark can, like, literally travel time, essentially. I don't know if the NASCAST listeners know, but I've always been really big on time travel. So, like, the whole
long-time
idea
listeners
of how
definitely know.
How we could just go back in time and find out stuff. So the number one thing I want to see in season 7 is Bran doing more history of Westeros, and more specifically the whole Robert Baratheon Rhaegar Targaryen fight at the Trident. Baratheon holding the hammer, and Rhaegar Targaryen being his beautiful self that they always describe. One of the, maybe not the greatest sword fighter of all time, because we know how the guy that wields the Star of the Morning or whatever, the Morning Star sword or whatever, he dies. That's he was so much better than Ned, and we find out that Ned's buddy stabs him in the back, and then Ned takes him down, and it's not how the story's supposed to go. So all the history is told by the winners. So really, how great and was Robert's, I got to imagine that Robert did something weird happen, how Rager actually got killed, and Robert just delivered the final blow type thing. Although it would be, they do a lot of foreshadowing. Another thing I like to talk about on the NASA cast, but they do a lot of foreshadowing in Game of Thrones where they kind of introduce concepts, but I highly doubt that the whole Ned Stark, Star of Mourning, and Van, you figured that out yet?
Arthur Dayne. I know the Tower of Joy, but yeah, Sir Arthur Dayne, and of course his friend is Howland Reed, which I'll come back to that here in a bit too. So
Reed stabs him back. I can't imagine that they're actually foreshadowing that's how Robert won, but it's, I really want to see how that goes. Like that whole, you stole my girlfriend or my future wife, blah, 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 and then Rhaegar's actually the one, that loves her and all that good stuff. So I'd really want to see that. I did a lot more specific stuff. Now, a couple other things I want to say is, like, I'm really interested in how the White Walkers get past the wall. Van said, I'm guessing that's more going to be more of a season 8, but they're going to have to include them at some point in 7, kind of because John, I think, is going to devote his time into bringing an army to stop them and try to gather the troops that way and see where they're at. So I just feel then Bran's got to get, I think we're eventually, and that's another point, is the Stark reunion, where you're going to have Sansa, Arya, Bran, John, hopefully all in one place. And I feel like that might come in season 7. That's another thing I want to see. And then the other two that I kind of want to see that probably aren't very important on most people's list is Return of Gendry. Last time we saw him, he was rowing a boat.
Yep.
And then the Return of Nymeria, the
Arya's direwolf.
Yes, that they kicked out. And just to foreshadow, I have a nice little prediction for Nymeria coming up.
Nice. I want to touch on your thing real quick about Bran and looking at the history and everything.
You can touch my thing all day.
Only me, though. So one thing I want to point out is, of course, the Tower of Joy scene was huge. That was, it barely missed my top 5 because that was one of the first things, again, that was revealed to me via the show and not the books. And we had this lore, this Ned Stark is this gallant fighter who somehow defeated Sir Arthur Dayne. But it turns out the only reason he did it is because Howland Reed saved his ass and stabbed him from behind. Of course, it was
a guy who they thought was dead. Like, he was the first guy that Dayne struck down. So he basically laid in the weeds.
And on that note, Reed is still alive and out there. And of course, he is Mira and Jojen's father. Jojen, of course, died in the show maybe a season or two ago. He's still not dead in the books yet, though. He's just sick. So I really do want to see some stuff about Howland Reed and the Tower of Joy scene where we're revealed that, of course, Jon Snow is, in fact, a Targaryen. He's not really a Snow. And that explains a lot. But one of the most important things about that scene to me is that it shows that maybe Ned Stark isn't as perfect as he was placed out. He really annoyed me a lot in both the books and the show with his sense of honor. And just, if you would have done one thing that you didn't consider even just slightly less honorable, then you could have stopped all of this. But he had to have a sense of honor, and it really kind of led us on the path it is. So I think that's going to be a really fascinating thing to look at. And with your time travel thing, too, the warging thing, there's a good theory out there that the Mad King Aerys, was actually went mad because he's hearing Bran's voice.
Bran Stark. Yep.
So I think that has some water, there's some weight to it. So I'd be curious to see that as well.
It could, but then I really love the time travel theories, and there's even theories about how Bran actually built the wall.
Bran the Builder,
Yeah, and all that, and that's actually him, because even Ned says that, like he basically lists one of the, I think it might even be back in episode 1 where he talks about all the things that Bran might be able to grow up to be, and he lists Builder, all that stuff. So, I mean, it seems like it could actually be true, but in a way, I really, even as a sci-fi fan, it's got to be perfect if that's how they're going to go that way, I want it, it's got to be delivered. Otherwise, I feel like it's going to go almost, it's going to cheese and add like a, it's just going to be so hard, and there's going to be too many loopholes. There's not going to be enough tied up ends. So that's one thing I fear about going down that route. But yeah, I've read those theories too, and they excite me because that's cool. Just awesome in my mind.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I shield myself from that because if I do stumble along one that turns out to be correct, I'll be pissed. I'll feel like I've ruined it for myself. But I think that that's interesting about the Mad King because I had read with what George Martin has been saying about the spinoff series that they're talking about right now. One of his posts said that they're not considering Robert's Rebellion as far as a prequel spinoff series, which really disappointed me. But he said that the reason that they're not doing that is because by the end of Game of Thrones, you're going to know everything that happened anyway.
Oh, okay.
So that's what leads me to believe that there might be some credence to something like that. And so what do you guys think in that Tower of Joy flashback scene where Bran was there with the three-eyed raven and he shouted and Ned seemed to hear him? Do you think that hints at perhaps the ability to change the past then, and that we will see more of that?
I don't think it's so much change the past as how the future has become. Does that make sense? So he's already changed the past because we're currently living in the present, right? So he's merely doing what has already been done.
Yeah.
So yes, I think he can change the past. I mean, we saw that with Hodor. We saw Ned kind of flinch in that scene. So clearly he can have an impact. And again, if this Mad King Aerys theory is true, he has a really big impact on that.
Man.
So I think that's viable, but I also don't think it's not going to be anything that was really changing what it is because it's technically already happened. If Jesse refute my time travel rules, I don't know, but be my guest.
No, I think you're right. Like because we're watching now, we're watching the present, so I think it's showing things how it already happens. But you know, I just worry when you get too involved with you got to keep it when it comes to time travel, you got to keep things simple, or otherwise you open the door and then all of a sudden Reddit turns into, you know, not these fun theories anymore, but a complaint session about how all these loopholes of how perfect these five books have been, just to ruin it with a time travel loophole of, you know,
yeah, it easily be feel like cheating.
So it just seems like a cheap cop out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be really cool if he turns out to be that kind of stuff, and you know, cause obviously he's going to be a three-eyed raven, and he's basically an almost a god, all powerful being. And it would, I think, it would be really, really cool if it went even further, and you find out that he, you know, if he is God, but it's like all the gods, you know, you get the
six,
yeah, exactly. So I mean, there's so far you can expand on it. So like, that's where, you know, I just don't see how it can be wrapped up in two seasons with that much stuff to tell. But
there's so few episodes left too, because they're only doing like eight this season, like five the next season.
Seven and six. But what maybe you haven't heard this news, Van, but they're actually, now that they're getting down and writing all of season eight, getting all this stuff figured out, they found out that they've got way too much stuff to cram into six episodes. So instead of adding on more episodes, what they're going to do is make each episode the length of a movie.
Oh, like a couple hours long? That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm all for that. This is kind of not Game of Thrones related to an extent, but this is a tangent I have. And that is that we have two benefits to television in this day and age. A, there's a lot of stuff to watch. But B, you have these AMC and HBO series. Breaking Bad was one of them. Walking Dead, where it's only, you know, 13 episodes a year. So you don't get as much content, but you're getting such good content that it's A, worth it. It's not watered down. This is a lot of ABCs. And B, it's I already forgot the other part to that. So, yes, I enjoy it. I like it a lot. But, oh, yeah, that's it. So it's easier to binge. So you can kind of power through stuff if you need to or want to.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I appreciate about Game of Thrones is that there's really not – I would say there's a little fluff, like a little filler. There's the occasional scene where you feel like, okay, maybe they could have done without that, and that didn't really further the plot to the extent that you would have liked. This bit seemed a little unnecessary. But for the most part, every scene has a purpose, and with only 10 episodes, there's just not a lot of crap. You know, everything is – you don't feel like you're wasting your time ever with this show.
Yeah. And that's – I feel like with very few good you know, if you're going to make my list of great shows, and Game of Thrones is obviously one, and obviously if we ever went back and did our TV show Madness back then when we had it, I'm pretty sure you hadn't even watched it yet, and I was the only one really pressing for it. But I think it would win a lot more matchups than it did. Breaking Bad is still, at this point, just because I haven't seen the end of Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad's still my favorite of all time, but Game of Thrones could easily pass it just
in
the
contention.
Way it's been. Yeah.
I just
so
hope
good.
That this series, and I have confidence that they will, but that this series ends as well as Breaking Bad did, because the last couple, 2-3 episodes of Breaking Bad were just absolutely
so
phenomenal.
Good. Yeah.
And I think that Game of Thrones will do that. And just even just talking about all this warging and time travel crap, like, there's going to be some stuff that just, like the Hodor moments, there's going to be more of that that just blows your mind and you're like, holy shit. So I'm so excited to catch the end of this show. But as far as some stuff that I want to see season 7, I don't know if this is going to happen on season 7 or season 8, but it seems like an eventuality. The Clegane Bowl, it's got to happen.
Yep.
The Hound in the Mountain, super stoked. But I'm kind of disappointed because I'm a huge fan of, I think his name is Thor, actually, like the actor, the last actor that they had for the Mountain. Yeah, just huge power lifter, like the world's strongest man in the world, basically. Dude is 6'9", 425 pounds in real life.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's insane. So it sucks that, like, I don't think they're going to use him anymore because, you know, you got this reanimated corpse of him and he's got this helmet on. So I don't know.
Well, I think that was him in this last season, even if it was just, you know, this weird corpse. I think that was still the same actor. So maybe they'll use him, but you won't see him, of course.
Yeah, it could have
been. He can't talk because, you know, his head and all that.
Yeah. So, yeah, Gendry was on my list, too, or Gendry, however
I still don't Gendry. Know.
Yeah. Anyway, and then Littlefinger, I'm excited to see him work his magic, basically, and put everything on tilt as he is wont to do. Like, a lot of, some people, I guess, have said that maybe he's going to be one of the first ones to die since he, you know, perhaps is not on the right side of the Starks, who are finally back in somewhat power. But I just think that Littlefinger is always scheming. He always seems to be one step ahead of somebody, and so I am excited to see some potential chicanery from Littlefinger.
Kind of like how your little finger is one step ahead of your ring finger at all times.
There you go. Nice one. So Jesse, we'll start with you then. What do we think will happen? Do you have any predictions for the season 7?
Well, I think my first serious one is I think we're going to see one of the strong women that man was talking about die, unfortunately. And I think it's going to be the death of Cersei. How that's going to happen, I don't know. I don't know if, you know, that she's going to have to submit to the dragons or whatever, and Tyrion just jams something through her, although I don't think Tyrion has the... I just don't see Tyrion actually doing the killing. In all reality, I guess my biggest prediction would probably be that maybe either Arya or Jaime kill Cersei, but I really strongly feel that Cersei does not make it through season 7. My off the wall prediction is that the Night's King, this whole time, the White Walkers are just ruthless. They're killing. Nobody really knows what they're about. They don't know why. All they know is that they take sacrifices of little babies. They turned into White Walkers as well, and then obviously he's got like the four horsemen or five horsemen that follows him, and then he's got a bunch of like dead people that are whites that he can raise from the dead to fight for him. But nobody really knows the true reason why. You know, they did the whole dragon glass through the heart of that guy who turned the Children of the Forest. I was going to call them Children's Corn, but Children's of the Forest. I think her name was Snap or whatever the hell her name was.
Leaf.
But anyways, she's Leaf. There you go. She's part of it. And they turned that guy into the Night's King or the first White Walker, you know, however you want to perceive it. I know that the books and some of the older, like, historical theories that there's bigger names and things for the Night's King, but I'm pretty sure that's what they call him in the show. So anyways, I have a feeling he's going to talk. He's going to speak. He's going to tell what they want. Might be late in the season. But I have a feeling that we're going to learn a little more about them and what's behind their passion. I don't know. I just don't feel like it's going to be the Martin way to, you know, introduce this evilness, and the White Walkers are supposed to be evil, and just march all through. It just always seems like there's always two sides to every character and two reasons to everything. Whether they're always good or bad, but like even a character like Cersei, I just talked about who I think is going to die. You know, she's always been about her family first and about herself, you know, about the, you know, taking care of the media people around her, whether they're, you know, obviously her three kids, dad or dad, she has nothing to live for now. So now it's about, you know, wreaking as much havoc as it could be that she can inflict. And, you know, she's about taking care of herself at that point. But, you know, there's all that history before that that makes you kind of understand why she would make that corner and be as bad as she is now. You know, before when she was all about killing Ned, she was always trying to do it for her family. So anyways, there's always two sides. So I just feel like we're finally going to see maybe what the White Walkers are about. Maybe not. That's my off the wall prediction. And then my third one is, one of the five spinoffs that HBO is going to predict, and that's Nymeria. You know, she's going to return in season 7 here and hook up with Ghost. And they're going to have babies, and then that's going to be, you know, one of the spinoffs is going to be an animated series about the direwolves. So I haven't figured out the name yet. I actually had a tweeting conversation with one of the Joffrey of podcast hosts about what we should name it, but that's one of my predictions for the spinoff. So
they need to get Pixar on that right away.
No kidding.
Children's show. We recently adopted two cats, and we named one Nymeria. So.
Oh, nice. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. The other one is Kjartan, which, Jesse, you will probably recognize that show or for that name from The Last Kingdom.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Oh, it's terrific. It's on Netflix. You give it a watch for sure. It's really, really good.
I have so much stuff I already have to watch. Don't get me on another one.
There's only 16 episodes.
Okay. It's one of those ones that once you start watching it, you'll try to compare it to Thrones, and then you just, after 3 or 4 episodes, you just got to give up on it and like it for what it's worth, because it is really good.
So. Do you guys think the Night's King, do you think he gives Jon Snow a tombstone pile driver at any point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe a throat slam.
Yeah. All right. What do you predict, Sir Van?
Well, a couple of things, a couple of broad options. First off, I think in the very first episode, within the first 15 to 20 minutes, somebody big dies. I don't know who it is, but I mean a big name character, ooh, someone who's been on the show for 3, 4, 5 seasons. Somebody big's going to die because I think they're going to want to appease the fans and make a big splash. I don't know who it is, but we'll see. You kind of made the point about Cersei kind of finally kicking the bucket. A lot of fan theories out there, a lot of personal theories. Jaime could be the one to finally do it. I think if you go back and listen to the prophecy that the old wench told about her, she said something about the younger daughter is the one that will kill her, the younger woman. So I think that could foretell that it's maybe Arya that does it. And that would be a cool moment if Arya did it. Honestly, it would be a cool moment if Jaime did it, though it would probably be bittersweet because he would regret having to do it. So that'd be interesting. And then I want to talk about Euron Greyjoy, which we haven't really discussed. He's the one that at the end of last season basically arose to the throne of king for the Greyjoys and the Iron Islands. And he has taken on the series of ships and is supposedly on his way to talk to Cersei. Now, we think that that may happen. I don't know if they mentioned the show, but in the books they mentioned that basically Euron and his travels came across this dragon horn. It's this horn that he could blow that supposedly could take control of the dragon. So I think if there's a battle where Daenerys is there and maybe the three dragons are there, he might take control of one. I think Tyrion might have another. I think Daenerys may have one. So that's just kind of an interesting conflux of things that I think could occur. But I really think we're going to see a lot more out of him. And I don't know, he may even be the big character that dies early on because he wasn't really well received. And as far as the books go, he's kind of taken the role of his brother, which is Victarion, who is actually the one I want to see in the show just because of how badass he is in the books, even though I don't really care for that segment, the Iron Islands and all that. So I think that's a character to watch out for and just an interesting take on it.
I have seen some, or a quote at least from the actor, I believe it's from the actor that plays Euron, saying that he's going to make Ramsay look like a child or something like that. How bad he is going to be this season. So we'll see about that. But yeah, I where I'm going to start too is with Cersei, and I am terrified to see, you know, like you guys said, she's the one redeeming factor that she's always sort of had is that she actually cares about her kids and she loves her family and all that. And she sort of proved that she really didn't, and she was just more about power and, you know, getting rid of her enemies than, you know, didn't think about what Tommen, how he would take it, and he ended up flinging himself out of that window, and now she's got nothing to lose, and that is just terrifying to see what she's going to do now. And I think that, and I don't know if this is going to be season 7 or season 8, but my prediction is that Jaime eventually does have to kill Cersei as the Mad Queen, as he has to relive sort of his Mad King days. It's like, oh, this all over again, deja vu. And then he's left with absolutely nothing to live for. So he basically, you know, we saw him riding off into battle, so maybe this would tie into that. At some point thereafter, he at least gets to die the way that he wanted to live his life, you know, as the greatest knight in all of Westeros. And, you know, he at least gets to die one-handed on the battlefield. So that's my prediction. And then I also think that Jorah might meet Melisandre and cure his grayscale.
Yeah, and actually, on that note, too, he's basically going to Old Valyria, which is where the Stone Men are. And the idea behind a lot of discussion of that...
If he's going there, that would pretty much nix my theory, because Melisandre, I think, is a Dragonstone.
Well, yeah, but she's... We don't know, would be the short answer. We don't know how long he'll be at Old Valyria, because we don't know, because there's a lot of talk of perhaps... You know, everything about, we'll call it the A Song of Fire and Ice series, because that's technically the title of the book series. Everything about it is about balance, fire and ice. And the balance to the way to kill the grayscale people is with fire. So there's talk of them being perhaps a way to combat the Night's Watch or the walkers, the White Walkers and so forth. So I think that's going to be a big part of it. And I really do hope he shows up, because I like Jorah. He was one of my favorite characters. I like the way the guy talked about it. So that's an interesting one, because I think Melisandre has a role to play, and I think that could very well be a part of it. So maybe they meet up at some point, but I do think he gets cured of it.
I want to see the scene where Sir Friendzone and Melisandre, you know, hook up to cure his grayscale. Because I'm sure it'll be hot.
Yeah. You know, I think that one really underrated aspect of the show is the Lord of Light and, you know, the power that the Red Women have and all that kind of stuff. Like, if there's really been one constant in the show, it's that all that crap has worked. Everything that they have said has come true. And the only thing that... Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, in a way, yeah.
It's You're just right. the interpretation of it that's up for debate. Yep.
Well, they tried to lead you astray as far as the one time that it didn't work, supposedly, was with Stannis. But, you know, she just erred in her judgment as far as him being the prince that was promised. And it was not necessarily the prophecy. She said is that, like, she saw the Lannister banners fall at Winterfell, and she was walking along the corridors or whatever.
But Stannis must have had some type of knight's blood or king's blood in him to create a shadow warrior and, you know, all that good stuff. And then,
Robert with the Baratheon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, but that's what I'm saying. Like, there, so there, even though it might have been just the, you know, the red, it led her to the right path, you know. If it wasn't for Stannis, she wouldn't meet Jon Snow type thing, and you're right that the Red Women they just misinterpret it or whatever. But I was going to go back to what Van was talking about, the whole you know, Old Valyria where the Stone Men are and where Jorah's going to try to find a cure or whatever. But in a way, I mean, does Jorah end up being the Stone King? You know,
could be. I mean, he could command an army of Stone Men.
But could they, I mean, just how much is left and how much of the story has been developed so far? Doesn't it just feel like that would just be like, a, I mean, almost too quick? You know, all of a sudden you just stumble across, you know, then Jorah can end up being a leader of these stone men, or someone could be, you know.
It just seems deleted, the battle. It does seem quick, but keep in mind, too, these are based off books. And in the books, they've touched on this quite a bit. And we're not even caught up to the same point. So there's data and there's information as far as that goes. And in fact, there's a whole different character arc that's kind of been ignored. And Jorah has taken over it. So, and I won't reveal that because that's a huge reveal. So I'll let you guys get to that point, or listeners get to that point in the books, because it's hasn't even been touched in the books. And I think it comes up. So people who've read the books, you probably know what I'm talking about by this point. And I think that comes up this season, too, and it's going to play a huge role in it.
All right. So, Van, how will the series end?
All right. I have two things for you. First off, my serious prediction. Not that they're not both serious. I really think Littlefinger winds up on the throne. I think ashes settle. Everything finishes. Littlefinger's on the throne, except everybody's dead, and there's really no kingdom to rule, and it's kind of a bittersweet moment. I really think we're going to see all our favorite characters. I think we're going to see Dany die. I think we're going to see Jon Snow die, Cersei, everybody. I think they all freaking die. And I think we're left with just Littlefinger as the only one. And he's up on the throne, but there's nobody to rule. And he's bitter and he doesn't have Sansa. He doesn't have anyone left. So I think that's my big prediction. However, I have one more for you. And you kind of touched on this, Nate. The prophecy of Azor Ahai, the champion of R'hllor, claims that there will come a day after a long summer when the stars bleed and the cold breath of darkness falls heavy on the world. In this dread hour, a warrior shall draw from the fire a burning sword. That sword shall be Lightbringer, and the darkness shall flee before him. Do you know who it is? Of course not. It's Hot Pie.
The prince that was promised.
Hot Pie, born of salt and smoke.
Delicious.
So that's my my prediction.
Very good. What do you got, Jesse?
I've kind of got I kind of wanted to add on to Van's Littlefinger. You know, it would be even better if Littlefinger had nothing to rule, but then Varys was standing there beside him.
Ooh,
because you know
good.
How much those two, like, you know, they play it all a lot of times. It almost feels like them two are, you know, they're friends, but they're like, this is what I can do, and this is what I can do, and you know, they're
frenemies.
But they're always competing against each other, and so it would kind of be great just to see those two, the only ones left, and they have nobody else to really, you know, like you said, rule. But my prediction is Iron Throne gets melted down, you know, probably in the you know, there's probably some old swords in there or whatever that have dragon glass in them. Back in history to help fight the White Walkers. So that's one of my predictions. And my ultimate prediction is that all of Westeros gets taken over. The White Walkers rule Westeros, and all of the mankind has to go retreat back to Esteros.
Essos?
Esteros, whatever. Whatever, Essos. There we go. That's what Essos. I knew it was Essos. But I typed Esteros, so I was reading it. So
nice.
But my theory is basically the White Walkers take over Westeros, and then basically it goes back to the ancient ways, and you know, Children of the Forest, and you know, the ancient gods or whatever, the Wirewoods and all that stuff end up coming back.
You know, that would be such a George R.R. Martin way to end it, I think, is just to have sort of the bad guys winning. Like, you kind of expect that at this point, so I wouldn't even be surprised if that's how we closed out the show.
But the bittersweet part would be that, you know, the people that we all learned to love, the characters, would still be alive. They just wouldn't be in the Seven Kingdoms anymore.
Oh, that bit would be a bit anticlimactic, but...
They'd be over there eating horses.
Yeah. Hanging out with the Thraki. All right.
But just to add on that, but maybe that's why they introduce Essos so much with Daenerys' character, and why they spent so much time over there is that they end up going back, and you know, they freed all the slaves, and now you have a new world that could actually be the new Seven Kingdoms over there. So it goes a little deeper than, you know,
what
I touched on. But anyways, I'll let you go.
Yeah, the like I said before, I think the Lord of Light is going to play a big part in the series. I don't exactly know how, but one thing that I would like to see is Randall Tarley coming around on his son, coming to appreciate what Samwell is after Sam helps save the day in some way at the end. I think that he's stuck around this long to be smart, and he's going to figure out some kind of way at the end of the show that, I don't know, he's going to sort of save the day as this.
Do you think maybe George R. R. Martin sees himself in Samuel Tarly?
Could be.
As, you know, the chubby guy, so that's why maybe he'll save the day?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he's going to be, like, you know, the big action hero or anything, because, you know, well, that wouldn't fit at all, but, you know, I think that in some, maybe even smaller way, he sort of saves the day. I don't think he necessarily... He's going to figure something out and then come in at the last minute and give him this precious information and sort of turn the tables. But
well, he did discover that the dragon glass is what can kill them, because he's the one that did it. So there you go. A hero for us all.
Hooray. And that's the only predictions that I could come up with, because I know how the show ends.
That's right, of course.
So we can read that right now. Everybody's been listening this whole time, waiting to hear the final chapter from George R. R. Martin, and I have it. Don't ask me how I came upon it, because it's not a good story. But it's kind of weird, because you didn't label, like, whose point of view this was. So we'll see. But you guys ready?
Oh, I'm ready as I'll ever be.
Can't wait.
The Night's King lay in pieces on the ground, just another pile of rubble amongst the thousands of White Walker corpses. Only a small army of the living remain, led by the former bastard and now true heir to the throne, Jon Snow. He's flanked by an unburnt but totally butt-ass naked Daenerys Targaryen, Lord Varys, looking fluffy and smug as always, the Hound, and Sansa Stark. Yes, the rest of your favorite characters are all presumed dead. I don't know why George R. R. Martin broke the fourth wall there, but, you know, anyway, moving along.
Well, that was easier than we thought,
exclaimed the bare-assed Daenerys, patting her dragon on the back.
It turns out having three dragons is just a carpet fire at these fools is a pretty good idea.
The Hound was still trembling in fear after all the fire that had just been spewed from the mouths of Dany's dragons. Fuck the king, he said. The Night's King, that is. He then whipped out his dong and urinated on the remnants of the Night's King's corpse. He was doing everything he could think of to stay on the good side of the dragons, so the good side of his face didn't match the burnt side. He was far too old to deal with that kind of crap. And fuck all those people who whine about dragons burning their goats and children alive, am I right? Bunch of cunts. He continued, speaking to no one in particular but looking side-eyed towards Dany's dragons. Daenerys wasn't overly impressed with the Hound's language, but she was so turned on by the destruction and their victory that she didn't mind. In fact, she was so taken by the moment that she proclaimed,
Let's have a corpse orgy! We'll hump all over the top of these worthless dead whites to prove that we own them and they suck!
Jon Snow shrugged and started to disrobe. He still cared for Ygritte, but it was hard to say no to Dany, and after all, they had to keep the Targaryen bloodline pure. The Hound joined in as well, keeping an eye on Dany's dragons just to make sure they were cool with it, but they were pretty tired after all that White Walker barbecuing and had laid down for a nap. Lord Varys clapped his hands together in delight, hopped up and down in excitement for the corpse orgy. He threw off his robe, unveiling a genital region that resembled that of a Barbie doll. He ran over to join the others, but he didn't really know what to do since he didn't have any genitals. So he just sort of skipped circles around everyone else, clapping his hands and occasionally slapping the flat patch of skin where his man parts once were. He smiled all the while. Just then, as Sansa averted her eyes and was wishing that she was back with Ramsay or Joffrey rather than watching the spectacle of grotesquery, she heard someone come running up behind her. She whirled around to see who it was.
Sansa, said Littlefinger, quite out of breath. Sansa, Sansa, what in seven hells is going on over there? A corpse orgy? Damn, if only I had the time. I tried for years to get corpse orgy night to be a thing of at my brothels, but the king always insisted that it was not cool. Anyway,
just then another set of footsteps could be heard approaching from behind. Again, it was Littlefinger? Littlefinger number one whirled around in horror, aghast at his likeness standing before him. For the first time since he could recall, he was speechless.
Do not fear, said Littlefinger number two. It is I, the many-faced god.
He winked at Littlefinger number one.
But does that mean I'm dead? A man is dead inside, and therefore did not need to be killed and have his lifeless corpse washed off by a young girl before having his face peeled off. Also, we have this new thing called plaster. It saves us a lot of trouble, said the many-faced god, wiggling his mustache at the other Littlefinger. In any case, Littlefinger number one said, turning back to Sansa, there's incredibly dire news that I bring Lady Stark.
Gods, groaned Sansa. We just defeated an entire army of undead and killed every Lannister in existence when Bran warged into Frankenstein Sir Gregor. Such tragedy that Gregor's undead heart gave out while Bran was warged into him, leaving Bran brain dead at the Red Keep. What now?
Littlefinger number one began. My dear Sansa, you no doubt have the tale. Know the tale of the Andals arriving at Westeros at the Fist of the First Men. Well, it turns out the one who was jotting down historical moments back then was dyslexic and a simpleton, and he recorded the event wrong, Sansa. It was actually the landing of the first of the Fist Men. It's an entire breed of men with fists the size of watermelons, and they've been living underground in cozy little weirwood caves, waiting for the White Walker army to fall. Now that the deed is done, they've come out of hiding and they're on their way to us right now. They're going to fist us all, Sansa. We must flee.
Snooze immediately killed the mojo of the corpse orgy, and the participants untangled their bodies from one another. Lord Varys, who was out of breath and taking a knee beside the action, gave his genderless nether region one final slap before sighing with disappointment, standing back up and putting his fancy robe back on. However, the news had come too late. The horde of fist men was already upon them, every one of them the size of the mountain, but with fists large enough to kill a man with one good fisting. Even Sandor Clegane was too intimidated to stand and fight. Run, he shouted, as the group turned to flee. It was tough going, though, and everyone was constantly tripping over the corpses of the former undead who were now dead once again. The fist men were gaining quickly. Dany strayed from the group and ran to wake her dragons, but they were not to be stirred. Several fist men were quickly upon her, and she was the first to be fisted to death. Her dragons slept. Just then, yet another Littlefinger appeared, seemingly from nowhere. The other Littlefingers looked pale and were at a loss for words.
If I'm me, and the many-faced gods is the other me, then who?
Littlefinger trailed off. Littlefinger number three grinned a sly grin.
This part was so much fun, he said, that I developed a time machine so I could come back and live the event again.
Littlefinger number three and Littlefinger number one high-fived each other, entranced in their own awesomeness. Littlefinger number one couldn't wait to find out what was coming. Number three pointed towards Varys and nodded. The portly Lord Varys had fallen over a pile of bones and was too breath to pick himself up and continue running. It took just one fist man to catch him from behind before Varys met an untimely demise. The Littlefingers laughed and high-fived again.
Not enough milk of the puppy in all of Westeros to help ease that pin.
It was then the many-faced god pulled off his Littlefinger face, revealing another identity. Hot Pie! The rest of the group was not impressed.
What the seven hells are you going to do as a pudgy little baker?
John said. Many-faced gods need to slow down these fist men if we're to survive. I've baked many pastries. All of these carbs will slow them down for true, said Hot Pie, and began flinging fritters and loaves of bread at the first men. The plan worked, and they stopped to consume the carbohydrate-laden foods. By the time they were done eating, their pace was much slower, and they fatter. Sansa, Jon Snow, the Hound, Littlefinger, and future Littlefinger had slowly scurried to a safe distance. Then the dragons awoke from their slumber and looked at once to seek revenge for their slain mother. They barbecued their fist men from a safe, non-fistable distance and ate their starchy corpses.
What do we do now?
Asked Jon Snow. Everyone replied in unison, You know nothing, Jon Snow. The end.
I think I can't dispute any of that as being fake. I mean, that all sounds exactly like George R. R. Martin's words, his writing style, and it's all legit fistmen. And I think that safe, non-fistable distance is going into my everyday vernacular.
The only thing I dispute is that I'm guessing he went into more detail. You know, there's three different Littlefingers, or four, or how many of them were, that they were actually the Littlefinger of the Fistmen. Because their
Man,
fists are so,
so
big.
Deep. Ties yeah, it all together.
That is deep.
It does. Oh, it ties the bow.
Layers upon layers. Oh, man. All right, guys. Well, we know how the books and the story ends now.
So no reason to watch this season, everybody.
Nope.
It's a wrap. End. Let's all go home and no longer look at this again.
Is there anything else we wanted to get out?
Lady Stoneheart. Let's talk about that briefly. And so in the books, that's Kat Stark. She's back from the dead. Thoros of Myr revived her, and she can no longer talk because her throat was slit, and she's kind of evil. I don't really care if she comes back in the show. I don't necessarily think she does, so I don't think she plays a role in the books. I just want to point out that Lady Stoneheart is the most awesome 80s metal band name I've ever heard.
That would fit. Yeah, I think they've already admitted that they're not going to incorporate her into the show.
Mm-hmm. But they don't have time, and they'd have to get the actress back. And I don't know.
True to the how the story ends, you know, the Hound whipping out his big hawk and pissing. I mean, I'm pretty sure that was a big F you to the Lady Stoneheart people when he pisses in the river, you know, last season.
After that's true.
Axes everybody. I think that was kind of everybody was kind of maybe the book readers were gasping, hoping that maybe something could happen, and then he just pees where technically they would have found her. So,
interesting. Yeah,
I think Arya takes over that role of the revenge of Stoneheart type stuff. So
it would make sense. We'll see. And like Van mentioned, that would fit in with the prophecy, which we know how much George loves. The foreshadowing, and that's part of why I love the series, is and it's always come to fruition as well, so I really do take a lot of stock in that.
He foreshadows so much we might as well call it five shadowing to bring up an old joke.
We even did that on the podcast once.
Yeah,
it was so awesome. Like it, and if anybody hasn't gone through and rewatched the show yet and you're listening to this, go back and do it, because there's so much that you pick up on the second time through that they hint at for future episodes and future happenings and stuff.
Or even third time through. It never gets old. I mean,
go back and see if you can find all the mentions of the corpse orgy, because they're in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're all about corpse orgies over there.
And the fist of the big men.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else that we want to get out then before we get out of here?
I'm just excited. I have nothing else. I'm excited for this season. I'm excited for the series to wrap up. But most importantly, I really want that fat piece of garbage to get off his ass and write the damn book.
Yeah.
See, I'm cool with it because, like, I still get to watch the show, and I'm trying to power read as much as I can when I have a chance. But I still don't think I'll get through all the books by the time he releases The Winds of Winter. But I'm the only one.
Books too.
I know. Oh, man. So, yeah, I'm the only one not really pushing for him to finish as soon as possible, because I don't want anything spoiled for me when I'm going to read the books myself. But anyway, on that note, folks, thanks for listening. Be sure to – oh, you can tweet at us, too. Please talk to me about Game of Thrones on Twitter. I'm at Nathan Doc, and Van is at Manly Van Lee, and Jesse is at Mr. Jesse Jordan. Keep on that conversation. I'm sure all of us will be tweeting about the show to a certain extent. Hopefully, limit the spoilers, I guess. Just for, I think you got on me one time for spoiling something on Twitter.
I don't think you actually spoiled it, though. I think that was a sarcastic one because you almost spoiled something.
Oh, okay.
Was that it? Now, I had one friend who did spoil something, and that made me mad.
Yeah. No, that's right. It was sort of a joke.
I didn't have HBO last year. No, I have the app thing. It's either HBO Now or Go. I don't know which one it is. It's $15 a month. You get access to all the programming. But I think you have to wait an hour after it airs to watch it, which sucks. But that's fine by me. I'll be able to do that on Sunday.
Yeah, you got to do the whole social media blackout in that case with Game of Thrones.
Yep.
For sure. All right. Until next time, folks, I hope you enjoy Season 7. Again, be sure to talk to us. Let us know what you think about the episodes. So until next time, Valar Morghulis.